Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, what's up? This is George Chen, and you're listening to my podcast, The Zum Podcast. Zum was a fanzine and record label, and continues on in this form, kind of like an audio fanzine. We get to interview people that are artists, musicians, comedians about what they're doing with their lives and how they got to where they are. And today is a very special episode. We've got a very international legend in the noise underground scene. It's going to be a conversation with Michael Morley from the Dead Sea and Gate, for projects like 2 Foot Flame and This Kind of Punishment. Michael is a big figure in the experimental music scene, and if you've never heard of him, I guarantee other people that you listen to are influenced by Dead Sea. And we got to catch up with him when he was on tour with Romley in January on the West Coast. Gate was touring with Romley, and we were able to talk to Michael in the bar of the Elbow Room before his sound check. So it's a little noisy, the Elbow Room in San Francisco on Valencia. Not the best place to have a quiet conversation, but you know, you take what you can get when it comes to interviewing an international dude. But Michael was really fun to talk to. He's a really interesting guy. Even if you don't know anything about the Dead Sea, I think you'd learn a lot from this conversation, hopefully. And I want to give a special thanks to Ben Goldberg from Bada Bing for setting up the interview. Bada Bing has released some Dead Sea albums and the Gate album, Republic of Sadness. Also, a special thanks to Angie Britsky for lending me her Zoom to record this conversation, and special thanks to Will Scopel for helping me adjust some of the audio issues on this episode. So hopefully you will enjoy this talk with Michael Morley.
Okay.
So, Michael Morley.
Hi.
Hi. Hi. Welcome. Hi. So,
thank you.
How was the show in Oakland last night?
Oh, fantastic. So, yeah.
I didn't make it out.
It was great. It was in your neighborhood.
I know. LCM is a great little spot.
It was a fantastic spot.
Ever played Oakland before?
No, never. No,
yeah.
No. Just mostly Great American Music Hall when I've come here.
I saw you guys, I think, I want to say, was it Rangda or was it Ben Chasney?
Oh, show. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember being at that show a couple years ago.
With the Dead Sea.
Yeah.
And then...
you played with Godspeed.
I played with Godspeed in September 2013 at the Great American. Yeah.
I remember I'm friends with Kevin from Total
Life.
So I went the
Kevin's
other night.
Great.
I went the night that you weren't there.
Oh, okay,
I was like,
yeah.
I was like, oh, man, how come they're not doing all...
I was there, but I was...
You were there.
Yeah, I was selling merchandise
for
Godspeed.
Oh,
yeah.
No, that's crazy. I probably talked to you then.
Probably.
I did buy that. I bought one of their 12-inches.
Yeah, no, because I was on the tour and I was...
Oh, then, most of the tour.
Yeah, I was on all of that tour, and so I just helped out wherever I could, so...
So you actually... I was going to say, you're here the most out of your whole crew.
Out of the Dead Sea. Yeah.
And
there's lots of reasons for that.
Yeah, what are the reasons?
Can't go into all of them for security reasons, okay. but yeah, I am.
And when's the first time that you guys ever came to America?
95. Mm-hmm. 1995, and we played the Great American Music Hall.
You did on that tour?
Yeah.
Probably with Thinking Fellers or Carolina.
I cannot remember. No, I would have. I wish.
Yeah.
I saw Carolina in 1994 when I was here because I toured with Faust and Keiji Hino.
As Gate.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay,
I played a bunch of shows already in 94 here, and then in 95 with the Dead Sea.
Uh-huh.
And then in 95, I came back here and toured with Two Foot Flame, Gene Smith and Peter Jeffries. And then I've been back a bunch more times.
So you've spent a lot of time in Vancouver.
No. I only ever really spent like maybe a week, I think, when I was rehearsing with Two Foot Flame. But no, I spent quite a bit of time here in San Francisco in 94. And I loved it. It was really beautiful, fantastic in 94. Before everything went to shit, I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, you can kind of tell, even though you're not here all the time, you can kind of tell how it's, how it's changing. I don't know if the same issues are happening in New Zealand or not.
I don't live in a place that is aggressively expanding. So it's probably more aggressively declining. So, where I live, it's not... nothing's happening.
Is that where you are?
Well, Dunedin specifically, but I guess I live outside of Dunedin in a small village in Port Chalmers. It's a port city, so it's, you know, it's got a container port at the end of the road, and it's it's kind of, you know, it services the southern part of the South Island, so I have a... it's a small town, really, where I live,
And maybe I read this, and you could tell me, you're an art professor, or you taught...
I teach painting and drawing and video production and sound production at a art school here in Dunedin. There's only one, one there. I think there's like two in the South Island. So,
and is that the school you went to as an undergrad?
No. I... my undergrad degree is in anthropology.
Oh, really?
Social anthropology. And then I was painting during that period, and then kind of got shows pretty much after I graduated. I was exhibiting. And then I started working at the school I teach at in 2000. And then I did a master's in painting at the University of Canterbury in Christchurch in 2006.
You're still going through education while you're still active.
I did a degree in 80. I graduated in 86 for the anthropology, and then 20 years of just pissing around, really, playing music and painting and doing exhibitions. And then where I work, they were like, "Michael, you should really get a master's," and I was like, "Fuck off." And then I relented and went, and I did it full time at another institution, which worked out really well. So it was good. So now I kind of have. It didn't give me a secure job. Well, I can't really go into it, but it was fucked anyway. But
I mean, you're fully doing music and art for your life.
That's
great. That's
pretty much
the goal, right, for a lot of people.
I think. I hope so. I mean, it's. In New Zealand, it was always really quite interesting, like through the 80s and 90s, being able to work as an artist. I mean, we were living, on social security, on the dole a lot of the time, and I didn't get a real job until the late 90s, when I got a job as an assistant curator in a museum. And so then it's kind of jumped around some museums, and then started working at the university, and then... transferred over to this polytechnic where they've got an art school that's been running because they needed a painting lecturer, and there was the place. I can't.
Do you do the art for all the records for yourself?
And the Dead Sea as well. People as well. I've done artwork for other people like Lee Ronaldo and Lamorte Young, French band.
Lamorte Young. I've seen that one.
No, the French band. And who else? Sylvia Castell. So I've done Sylvia and Nina Morgier and I did a record some time ago, and it's going to come out. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I did some work for that as well. Yeah. The artwork. Yeah.
It's pretty prolific. That's a lot of stuff.
It doesn't seem to be prolific, but it's. I guess it must be. Yeah. It's kind of weird.
I mean, you guys sort of came up in still like a very cassette-oriented culture, right?
Oh, of course. Because there was no record pressing plant in New Zealand had stopped working in 1987, 88. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they shut it down because of the rise of digital, because of CD manufacturing essentially, but even then they weren't manufacturing in New Zealand, they were importing.
Right.
So it became an international commodity then at that point. So in New Zealand from the 40s, maybe even earlier, through to the late 80s, they were pressing records in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Using master tapes and plates coming from overseas.
Okay.
And then it all just stopped in just a moment. And it became, the global international market.
Yeah.
And so everything became an import.
Yeah. So I heard that the Australian record pressing plants, that the vinyl quality just wasn't very good. I heard that years ago in the 90s.
Yeah, I don't know. There is a record pressing plant in Melbourne that I'm going to try out this year. And they're just a new plant, so I don't know. I don't know what the mainstream plants were like. You look at some of the records and they're really shitty, thin plastic vinyl.
And
you kind of wonder what the hell was going on there. And sometimes, you look at the cover art and it looks like bootlegs. They just photographed the covers and then they've stripped in the New Zealand addresses on things, obliterated the American addresses, and it looks terrible. But, it is what it was, I guess, the culture at the time.
So
cassette culture was... at the time was a necessity because there was nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we couldn't get... When we started, no one knew who we were. Everyone hated us.
What was the first shows like?
Oh, the first shows were great. I remember... Well, we started recording the first time we started rehearsing, so we built up an archive of recordings pretty quickly. And then we released a cassette within a couple of weeks of the first recordings we made, we released those recordings.
Yeah.
Everyone hated it. and we probably made 20 copies.
Yeah.
And then we worked
eBay
on,
gold now.
Yeah, probably. Maybe, yeah. Well, that thing got released on vinyl by Bada Bing.
Oh, okay. That's
a few years ago, DR503B.
Mm-hmm.
So that was released by Bada Bing some time ago when they were doing some reissues. And so... getting that out on vinyl finally was that's amazing. I wish I'd been able to do that in 1987.
Right, yeah.
But obviously it was just out of, it was just way too expensive. We were pretty young, and so negotiating that kind of space was out of our league.
When's the first show you ever played out of town? Did you guys...
I went to Christchurch and played a show. Yeah, that was a pretty good show. There's a live recording of that available on the internet. If you just find it, it's James Grieg, I think, recorded it. And it's... I can't remember the name of the club we played at, but it was a pub, one of those funny Christchurch pubs that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And it was weekends, or a Friday and Saturday night.
It's mid-80s?
I would be 87, probably, Played with Alistair Galbraith.
Right, yeah.
Plagal Grind, maybe it was, maybe pre-Plagal Grind, maybe just Alistair by himself.
Mm-hmm.
And that show was really good, I really enjoyed it.
How did you guys all meet then? Were you
Robbie, Bruce, and I met...
people?
Well, we met at university.
Yeah, you were at school.
Yeah, I remember Bruce, because he was a year... maybe a couple of years ahead, older than us, Robbie and me. Because Robbie and I were... Robbie denies this, but Robbie and I were in the same history class.
In college.
And so I would always see him come into the lectures late and, stumble into the lectures. And I was like, who's that guy with the red hair? He's really cool. And he started playing in the Verlaines pretty much in that year.
Oh, he was in the Verlaines?
Yeah.
Oh, I never even knew that.
Oh, really? No, Robbie played in the Verlaines after the first drummer, Greg, left. And so he was there from, after Death and the Maiden came out.
Yeah.
He's there for, 10 o'clock.
I think I saw them in, 93, whatever album they
were. Oh, okay.
Would he have been in it then, in 93?
Yes.
Wow,
yes.
Okay, so I actually saw him.
Well, 93, hang on. Ooh.
They had a major label record out here.
Maybe not then.
And it's really hard. I know some of my friends from there, have to get, grant money to even get out. You can get grant money to tour to be, a cultural ambassador.
Yeah.
That band, the Coolies, if you know them.
Oh, yeah, I love the Coolies. Oh, Chanel and...
Yeah.
Oh.
I met them, 10 years ago. Yeah.
I'm in love with them.
Yeah,
both,
yeah.
Both these women are just
Pumice
fantastic.
Is in the guy
he's okay.
Yeah.
But it's Tina and Chanel who are the amazing women in that band. Just such a great band.
Yeah.
I love them. They're just... whenever I'm in Auckland, we hang out with them because they're always so much fun. And Robbie and I have spent quite a bit of time just partying, having listened to lots of rock music, and just talking shit constantly.
Yeah.
So yeah, they. Yeah, no, the Dead Sea have never received any funding to do anything.
Really?
Basically, the funding body don't know what we do. They don't recognize us as anything.
Yeah.
They think we're makeup shit, and like we're telling them lies. And that's pretty much what I think. Because,
even though you're established as a visual artist, they
don't
know that.
No, they don't consider that at all. They're a pretty hard nut to crack, really.
Yeah.
And so I remember one time we gave them like a 100-page CV and like a really detailed project proposal.
Yeah.
And they were like, no.
Wow.
Like, wow. So why not? So, well, we don't know. You have no profile. This was in like, this was in the mid 2000s.
So, wow. Yeah. So, you're so established at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was kind of just sad, really.
Yeah.
So we just kind of bypassed that kind of stuff.
Yeah. When you do solo, do you ever get any of that help?
As a painter, yes.
As a painter.
So in 94, when I came here, I had a grant to come and study American art. So I was just here to, really, I came over to do the Table of the Elements showcases.
Okay.
And then I toured with Faust and K.G. Hino.
Yeah.
And then toured with Thurston and Thurston's band.
In '94. Yeah, was that's before
Tim Folhan.
Oh yeah,
and Steve Shelley.
Right, yeah.
So Male Slut. So played with them and doing duets with Lee Ronaldo.
Nice.
And playing with K.G. Hino as well. Hino-san.
And you did you stay in one city for a while and study art?
Here in the US.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess I was here in San Francisco for a while.
For a while, yeah.
Living for a bit.
Oh, really?
And I was, well, maybe for a month.
Yeah, yeah.
Two,
still significant.
Oh,
yeah.
It was a great. Oh, I loved it. It was a fantastic place to come and stay in the 90s, definitely. 94.
Yeah.
Staying on Judah and 9th.
Uh huh. Wow.
With a couple of really good friends. So,
yeah.
It was pretty great.
That's pretty. I never knew that, yeah. And you knew Grux or you knew Carolina back then?
I went and saw Carolina play. Yeah. I was staying with Barbara Manning and
friend Greg Turkington? No,
not Greg Turkington.
Well, you must
know him now.
He's blown up.
He's fantastic. I love him.
Yeah.
I want to see that film. I haven't seen it.
I haven't either. Yeah.
No, it looks really good, and I keep seeing Neil Hamburger videos on YouTube, and I'm like, oh, man.
Well, he's doing the first interviews in a while where he's not in character.
Yeah.
Like, where he's just being himself.
Yeah.
And it's real. I find that stuff really fascinating.
Is he living here in San Francisco still, or is he
moved somewhere else? He's in L.A.,
yeah, okay.
is what I've heard. And then I think he was spending a lot of time in Australia.
I think really?
Yeah. I mean, in the 2000s,
okay,
right?
Yeah.
That's what I had heard.
No, I really like Greg's work. It's, it's a weird, dark dive into American subconscious,
yeah.
I think. And
but you live with Barbara Manning.
Well, I was staying with Barbara and her roommate at the time, so we were just kind of hanging out and playing. Played some shows, The Purple Onion.
Yeah.
And with with Seymour, with Charles Nielsen.
Uh-huh.
And, we had a really great time. It was fantastic.
That Purple Onion has now become a comedy venue. It's like become more
It was heading that way, perhaps, some point.
They always talk about how like Phyllis Diller got her start there and all these American comics started
there. At the Green Onion.
At the Purple Onion. I mean, it was in a different location, but like people like the Smothers Brothers and Phyllis Diller supposedly started out there. Like the Cosby people would be there all the back in the day. Exactly. Watch your drinks the whole time. So you actually spent some time here and have you kept in touch with Barbara Manning at all?
Yeah, no, I do. She lives in Los Angeles now.
Oh, does she now?
Yeah.
I remember a couple years ago reading an article about her like going back to college and then like not getting a job and like kind of like really having a hard time.
Yeah, I think she's working as a teacher now in a school. It's just great.
Totally
she's a great teacher.
Yeah. But also just like an unsung musician, like a person.
Really?
That, I feel just, like people maybe don't, like younger people don't know who she is, I think, these days.
Maybe, but I always thought she was a well-known musician, certainly in the San Francisco area.
Yeah, for sure.
And because of World of Pooh and then also you know, work with Seymour. And yeah. so, I mean, I always kind of rated it as very highly.
It's very strange because,
as a musician and performer.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, there's, like, a difference between, like, being known and being, like, legit. Like, yeah. I think that's, and you would right. know what that's like, right? Yeah. That's kind of, like, the conundrum yeah. of with a lot of stuff.
Well, living in New Zealand, it's, you just kind of, it's not, we don't take part in New Zealand music or what's called Kiwi culture.
Right.
I don't like the term because, you know, the Kiwi is either a fruit or a bird, but the way that they use the term Kiwi music, I we're not part of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely don't want to ever be part of that stuff, which is always, I guess...
Does it feel like offensive, kind of, or is it just like, it's just watered down?
Oh, no, it's watered down and it's kind of ghettoized and it's, you know, New Zealand culture referring to itself continuously, and it's like, it's such a load of bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those people aren't, you know, famous anywhere except there.
Right.
So, and they have no credibility anywhere except there.
Mm-hmm.
So, they have no relevance.
Yeah.
In some ways. Like, it's always fascinating. There's a New Zealand Music Awards mm-hmm. thing, which I've never been to. But it's always fascinating to kind of look at it as an observer and kind of go, really, is that Kiwi New Zealand music? Is that... That's what it is.
Yeah.
And it's derivative and it's banal, it's mundane, it's a whole bunch of, you know, it's a whole bunch of shit really. And so we're not part of that, I don't think. Which mm-hmm. is why we perhaps aren't recognized. Mm-hmm. Which is fine with me. I don't care.
Yeah.
Really.
It's yeah.
I'd much rather be unknown there.
Yeah.
Really. It affords a lot of anonymity and That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a friend who is obviously obsessed with you guys. This is Helga.
Oh, Helga.
Who did the record.
Yeah, that was
tribute
beautiful.
To you guys. No,
the
yeah.
beautiful exhibition mm-hmm. in at the Human Resources
yeah.
Gallery in Los Angeles. And that she's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say...
So it's like you clearly have made an impact on a lot of people outside of
Helga
New Zealand,
was studying in New Zealand, though.
Oh, she met...
So, yeah. she was in Auckland studying with Phil Dadson,
mm-hmm.
who's a really good composer, mm-hmm. New Zealand composer. And so she had some good kind of entry points into that kind of music, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, she kind of understands, perhaps,
mm-hmm.
the weird kind of conundrum of New Zealand music.
Right,
how
being
it operates.
An outsider
and certainly,
a little bit, yeah.
And certainly the underground.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think she understands the underground there quite well.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And I heard last night that you did a laptop set. So
no, I did a sampler.
Sampler.
I used a sampler and a synthesizer. Yeah, mm-hmm. I didn't do a laptop.
Okay,
I dropped the laptop in favor of a really kind of rudimentary sampler, so I can. I was just to do electronics, yeah. but I was using a Chaos Mini 2 because it's good to travel with.
Yeah,
and then a really tiny
Akai.
Yeah. No, it's an Akai. Oh yeah. Chaos pad and then an Akai sampler, a MPX 16. So I record into that guitar samples and mostly guitar samples, but also old synthesizer samples as well.
Because
I have an array of synthesizers at home, so I can, like, you know, cull stuff from there and kind of build mm-hmm. libraries.
Mm-hmm.
So I have an array of kind of sounds I can use if I need to. Yeah.
How do you feel about like the when you decide like it's going to be a guitar set or it's going to be a sample-based set, or is it just
what people ask me? So, like last night, I wanted to fit in with the Ramley set, and so they were doing electronics, and I thought I'm definitely not going to play the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And then tonight, it was like they're going to do a rock set, so I'm like, I'm definitely playing the guitar.
Yeah.
So it's just really, I mean, for this, these four shows, it's really based upon what they do, what they want to do, and I'll just kind of tailor my
mm-hmm.
set to what they think. They want to do
So a lot. It seems like hooking up with Silk Breeze in the beginning was probably what really got you into America. Is that accurate or no? Or like Thurston helping you out or something?
In '94, it was Table of the Elements.
Oh, Table of the Elements.
Yeah.
Okay.
So by '94, I had released stuff on Majora, who were a Seattle-based label.
That's the Sun City Girls label, right? Yeah.
So had released like three albums mm-hmm. with Nick, and then Jeff Hunt contacted me, and I did the Do Line with Herman, then came over and played those showcases.
Was it Atlanta?
Atlanta, that's where they're based, right? Yeah, yeah, well, it was where they were based then. So Atlanta and then a whole bunch of other showcases and out here as well. And, I mean, that was great. So it was an entree then. And then I did some stuff with Silbreeze as Gator. Did a 7-inch. And I guess the continuation of the Dead Sea stuff as well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then it seems like Ben Goldberg has taken a lot of care
reissuing. I think so, yeah. I mean, it was good to... I mean, because Silbreeze kind of went into a hiatus. And we were kind of left kind of wondering what the hell to do. And then we did our, the double CD as a kind of response to our situation. And then Ben came along and, you know, offered to release stuff. And we had Future Artists already up and going at that point. So we just handed him the tapes for Future Artists and the gave him the cover art and said, oh, if you want to release it, there you go. You can do something with it. And so then Ben's been fantastic because we've been doing the ongoing recordings and also the reissues. Yeah. Although the reissues, it doesn't seem such an imperative, you know, at the moment. It's like, yeah, I've got a lot of other stuff to do as well. So, yeah. I mean, the new album that I did with Kai.
You did something with Kai, okay.
Yeah, I just released an acoustic 12-string guitar record.
You should get that if you have
them. I don't have
you
any.
You probably don't, because you have to buy them, yeah.
But I've got a Bandcamp.
Okay.
So,
I did look at that.
GateMM.bandcamp, and that's got, it doesn't have Moonrise on it, but it's got a couple of other things. It's got a free album, Good Deeds and Some Love, and The Burning House, and then some Music Box compositions that I've been doing as well.
What's the most exotic or distant place you guys have traveled to do music? It could be you
Scotland.
Individually or as a group. Really?
That's probably Scotland.
That's the weirdest.
Although, by myself, I went to southern Italy. So I went to Taranto with Silvia Castell.
Right.
And we played down in an old palace basement. Down in Taranto, that was really nice. I love Italy, so that was.
And food's great.
The food's great, and also Portugal. So Oporto and Lisboa played there as well.
Did gate shows? Yeah,
I've done gate shows at your gallery ZBD, and it was just a club in Oporto. But yeah, those were. I mean, I've been to Portugal before, just as a tourist, just to wander around for a month.
Yeah.
So it was good to go back there and play. Yeah.
Have you had your paintings like displayed in America? Like had been in shows?
In 94 I had a show at Thread Waxing Space.
In New York.
In New York,
okay.
Yeah. And then there was something that Kim Gordon had organized.
Are you on that compilation? The Thread Waxing compilation?
Oh, I might be, yeah. I think there might be something
kind of like
on there.
Realizing that I maybe
No, there might be some gate thing on there, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So Kim curated a show. So Kim curated a show. She curated. We did a kind of like a exhibition of. She did her. I think they were portraits, and I did bombs, and so drawings of bombs, missiles, and stuff.
Wow!
And so we had that Thread Waxing Space, and then did a performance. So that was in the year 94. Yeah, and then nothing really. I did. I had work for the Sonic Youth exhibition, Sensational Fix. That was in Europe during 2008, 2009. And then in Houston just now, just doing a show with... So Roland Grunenboom, who's the curator from Sensational Fix, he now lives in Houston, and he just suggested that I do a show there.
So it was a solo show?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, with Nina Canal. So I did Nina Canal from Utt.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The band. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So
she's also a visual artist?
Yeah. So okay. She lives in Petaluma.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
She's coming tonight to the show.
You're blowing my mind.
She's
right
coming.
Now.
She's going to come tonight to the show.
She lives in Petaluma.
She lives in Petaluma. Wow. She's coming down tonight.
Wow.
Here for the show.
Wow. Great.
Hopefully, if she makes it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. It's it was really great. We did a little acoustic guitar performance with my 12-string and some bells and some cymbals and some maracas.
So you had to borrow all the gear. You pretty much had to borrow out here, right?
And I bought
except
a 12-string. I bought my sampler. I bought my Chaos. I bought a whole bunch of leads. I bought my guitar rig, the FX pedals. I bought a 12-string guitar in Houston, as you do, and some cowboy boots.
Yeah.
And then did a show in Austin. Came out here, came back here because I could go home at some point.
You're right.
I just thought, well, it's good to, like, these shows with Ramley that Quintus organized were really great because it's like, fantastic. I can come out here and then play those shows and then go back home.
Yeah.
Although I'm doing a show on the 24th as well in Los Angeles.
In LA.
We're doing a Bodygate Head show.
Oh, right, because Bill's going to be there.
Yeah.
That's right.
I just
saw the flyer Tim was working on.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Like, so you're going to, are you going to play with Bill? Like,
oh, yeah.
Bill collaborative.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, we've decided, I didn't know what Kim was doing, and I don't know if she was in Los Angeles.
I think she is because I was just there, and I just saw her at a movie theater. Oh,
okay, yeah.
Like, I don't really know her at all.
Oh, okay.
But I saw her at a movie theater, so it's just like, we saw
Star Wars.
The Big Short.
Oh,
that,
really?
That movie about the... And this is so weird to be recording this.
Like, that's okay.
I'm like, is she with her daughter? I don't know, like, who she's with. But I didn't want to... Like, I think she was just, like, looked at me like, oh, God, this guy knows who I am.
Right.
Like, recognizes me. And I was like, I'm not going to be weird about
the
it.
The other woman is a younger version of her. That's
it's probably...
Coco,
yeah. Coco, yeah. That would make sense.
Yeah.
But, so... Oh, you're going to... Have you... Oh, you have another record with them, right?
Yeah,
you guys
we
did a record.
We did a Bodygate Head record.
That's right.
Record and,
that's right. You have one already. Right,
yeah,
for Feeding Tube,
yeah.
Right.
And so that was from a performance we did at...
But you're not on the cover, right? Who's on the cover?
That's The Runaways.
Like, that's not any of them on the cover.
No,
I didn't know
I blocked out all the faces
because,
it's The Runaways. So,
How are you feeling about... Were you everyone was affected by David Bowie's death, I think, a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's pretty massive.
And Lemmy.
Yeah. And today, Alan Rickman.
Yeah, I heard Alan Rickman.
So
like,
crazy.
Fuck, you're joking me.
Yeah, like it's a huge, like, British, like, celebrity.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
It's so nuts.
Lemmy, yeah, because that was... I mean, I loved Motorhead, and I loved Hawkwind.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And, Hawkwind probably... I haven't really listened to Motorhead for, a lot, but I play in a band called the Fuck Chairs.
Okay, what's this band?
This is an electronica, we've got a band camp as well.
Uh-huh.
So the Fuck Chairs, easy to find.
Fuck
and,
Chairs.
So the other guy in the Fuck Chairs is a big Hawkwind fan and Motorhead fan. So I listened to No Sleep to Hammersmith, about 3 months ago for the first time and loved it. It was fuck, this is great. Why haven't I heard this before?
Yeah.
And so I've listened to a bit of Motorhead again, obviously recently. And Bowie, I remember Pinups when I was a kid. My mother bought it as an album to listen to, and so I was really intrigued by him.
Yeah.
Then I think Heroes, I love Heroes.
It holds up so well. So much of that 70s stuff holds up so well.
And about a month ago, I watched a documentary about him that went from, his early period up until about The Lodger.
Yeah.
And that was great to kind of watch that and kind of go, oh, okay. And then Black Star came out, and I kind of like Black Star, and I like its kind of... its overall tone, and I like the way it kind of made me, the Scott Walker album Bish Bosh, which I really like. And so it was great to hear Black Star. But then it was like, I woke up, one morning and go, what?
I was not, because literally it was a couple days after his birthday. So I had just seen all this stuff about it. And I had written something on Twitter or Facebook last year, just I was having this moment of being we're not ready for Bowie to die. I just said that last year.
Yeah.
He's got so much the acting, the music, and the everything. Just huge cultural
it's
impact.
Terrible.
It's pretty
really
intense.
Lots of ways, yeah.
Yeah, but also
why not Bono? You know, or I saw another Cliff Richards. It's like,
Is he still alive? Yeah, Cliff Richards is still alive?
That wanker's
still
alive.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
What, growing up in New Zealand, there's probably just certain cultural things that we're not super aware of. I mean, like, everyone knows about Peter Jackson now, but was there, like, weird TV growing up? Like, a weird, like,
New Zealand
local...
TV?
Yeah, weird.
Of course, it was weird.
Just, like,
New
super
Zealand
weird, like, a local.
But we've always been
thing.
Infected by American culture and English culture in varying degrees,
Yeah.
So it just depends what you're watching. I don't watch a lot of television, so...
Oh, really? Like, even now, you're
Oh, really... I only watch Al Jazeera.
Oh, yeah?
That's what I watch.
Really?
Yeah, I don't watch any other stuff, because it's all meaningless crap.
I guess, like, Rupert Murdoch's probably also, like, a dominating
force. He's a wanker that's, got himself in there. No, so I watch mostly, Al Jazeera is free-to-air in New Zealand, so it's that. Mm-hmm. I watch that all the time, night and day. I'll fall asleep listening to it.
Yeah.
Because that stuff doesn't get reported in New Zealand.
Right.
It's a conservative right-wing government at the moment.
Really?
They're a bunch of fuckwits. Mm-hmm. Their main task is to change the flag.
Really?
It's idiotic.
It seems like I mean, I hate to keep lumping you in with Australia, but we always hear a lot of what's going on over there.
Yeah.
They're really getting really anti-immigrant over there, too.
No, not so much. No, it's lowest common denominator stuff. Mm-hmm. So the Prime Minister is a complete asshole.
Yeah.
And
Abbott, is that?
No, in New Zealand it's
John
Key.
Okay.
And so he's an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
And his government are a bunch of idiots. And it's like, what is it? I can't remember the name of the American author, you know, the Confederacy of Dunces.
Oh, yeah.
Richard Brautigan. So it's like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Confederacy of Dunces. You know, they go and spend $26 million on a flag referenda. It's like, I don't want a flag. I want republicanism. I want to get rid of the fucking monarchy of England.
Oh, yeah.
Fuck them. And fucking, like, let's make it a proper fucking country.
Yeah.
And give sovereignty back to Maori. And you know, fucking get rid of the crown, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
But that's not on the agenda. That's nothing. That discussion is not being had.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what fucks me off. It's like $26 million on a fucking flag. That's a logo.
Yeah.
Basically, it's a logo they want. So it's annoying, it's depressing, it's a whole bunch of things I don't really want to dwell on because it's demoralizing.
Yeah. It seems like you're very, you're from there and you kind of represent it to some people in the art world or in the music world. But like you also seem to be like, you like are friends with people from everywhere.
Yeah.
And you kind of have had this life where you can travel all the time. And not represent like...
Probably only from the age of 30, because I was stuck in New Zealand until 30. And then So by the age... When I was 30, then I kind of like managed to get a grant to come to the US to look at art. So I was stuck there for 30 years. And then the last, 22 years.
You never left for the first 30 years of your life?
Yeah.
You never went to, like, even... What's the furthest you would go? Nowhere.
Nowhere. Yeah.
Like, same town?
Pretty much.
Wow.
Yeah, so, I lived in the North Island, so that's where I was when I was a kid, and then I went to the South Island to go to university, to Dunedin, and then stayed there after I graduated, and then, you know, we... started the Dead Sea.
Yeah.
And then, we had no money.
Right.
You know, so it's like, you can't go anywhere.
It's like a dull situation, right?
It costs thousands of dollars to get anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Although you can go to Australia.
Right, but like it's...
No one in their right... I mean, you know, Australia's a lovely country and everything, but it was not... Like, they go, Australia's a stepping stone. It's like, it's not a fucking stepping stone. It's like just another country to get sucked up in by, you know, so... No, stuck in the South Island for, until I was 30. Mm-hmm. From 20 till 30, so 10 years, 17, 18, I went to Dunedin.
Yeah.
So really, I'd travel up to the North Island to see my parents and travel back to Dunedin, but no, not leaving the country.
And do you have a family? Or
I have a partner and two children
now. You got kids,
We live in Port Chalmers and have a big old house and a big garden.
Yeah.
You know, we've had that for 20 years now. So.
How old are your kids?
Molly's 15 and Luca's 13.
Okay.
They're harassing me to buy them Adidas.
Oh, yeah.
Leisure wear. It's like, we can buy that in New Zealand. What the fuck are you talking about?
So do they have any awareness of kind of what you're up to?
Oh, I think they're mostly just embarrassed. Yeah.
Like, you think, like, yeah, they're like, their teachers probably.
Some
know
of
who
the,
you are.
Yeah. I remember Molly coming home from school one day and going, oh, my God. my science teacher was like just going on about you. It was so fucked up. So I was like, oh, look, don't listen to her. Just say it's lies, you know. But so, yeah, they maybe have some idea, but they're not really interested because it's like it's the shit that Dad does.
Right,
and
right.
It's like it's not pop music.
Right, which probably means like someone will come over to the house like, oh, Thurston's here, and they have no idea.
Yeah, no, kids that come over to the house kind of wander around the house going, oh, there's paintings everywhere, and there's musical shit everywhere, and there's like, I'll be in my room, my studio room, just making noise, and I'll get knock on the door like, shut the fuck up, Dad. Like, I've got a party going on in my room, and you're making all this shit.
They think you're like in a man
noise.
Cave, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, oh, that's Dad making his weird noise.
Yeah, yeah. No, they're really funny. I love them.
Yeah.
They tolerate a lot of shit from me, and yeah, me being away quite a lot, but they're good. Really.
Do you feel like you would ever want, like, aside from family stuff, like, is there a city that you've been to where it's like, oh, I would see myself retiring here or just like living here for a while? Is there any place you travel to where it's like, I wish I could just spend 5 years here?
Oh, Paris.
Paris.
Yeah, and Marseille. I really like Marseille.
And the art, if you're like... So what kind of art did you get into when you started getting into art?
It's mostly abstract work that I like. I don't like representational figurative work. It's not really my scene, but abstraction. So, you know, certainly like when I was young, like Cy Twombly and...
Yeah.
Agnes Martin and Ellsworth Kelly.
So
and,
when you go to L.A.,
yeah.
Are you going to go to the Broad?
Yeah.
Do you know about that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I just went there recently.
Oh, really?
And it's pretty amazing. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was just in Houston for the last 12 days and went to the Minnell, and they've got that whole Cy Twombly gallery.
Oh, really?
And that's just like...
There
were paintings there that, you know, the Age of Alexander, and there's a couple of other paintings from like 59, 60, 61 that I've only ever seen in books.
Mm-hmm.
And then to stand in front of them again, stand in front of them for the first time and just go, holy fucking shit.
Yeah.
I'm now standing in front of this thing that's meant so much to me
for
so long. I mean, I have cried in front of some paintings.
Yeah.
But
like what? Like Cy Twombly or other stuff?
Sigmar Polka, the German painter from the he died some years ago. He was a great German painter from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s into the 2000s.
Oh, there's also a Weimar Republic kind of show at the LACMA.
Oh, there is too. Yeah.
Otto Dix.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah. I didn't know much about it, but once I saw like the sort of I end up liking like the Otto Dix stuff.
Right,
and, like,
yeah, Otto Dix is pretty good. I mean, mostly it's like people from the 60s like Gerhard Richter and Sigmar Polka and Blinky Palermo. Early Georg Baslitz, although Georg Baslitz has fallen into I don't like him anymore because he says terrible shit about women artists, and I'm like,
oh, really?
That guy is so fucking out of touch. I don't know what the fuck he's talking about.
Well, you're gonna love the Broad. There's like a Cy Twombly room in there.
Yeah, I love Twombly's great. Rauschenberg, I like some Rauschenberg, early Rauschenberg, 50s, 60s Rauschenberg.
I'm not a big
Robert
fan of the
Ryman.
Building. Yeah.
Oh, the building's terrible?
Well, I don't know if it's terrible. You'll see. It's real weird. It's got
LACMA?
A lot of lumpy...
Okay.
Well, LACMA has the Weimar show.
Yeah.
The Broad
has the
Cy Twombly. It's got it. You'll see it.
Yeah.
If you're going to have some time
when
you're
in
LA.
Yeah, I've got a week in LA.
That's
going
to be great. It's such a good art scene down there right
now. Oh, it's fantastic.
It's really good, yeah.
It's really kind of... I mean, it has always been... I think it's always been another center.
Yeah.
I think because Art Forum was established there in the 60s, I think, wasn't it? And then... I think always has had people like Raymond Pettibon.
Yes.
He's,
have you met him? Have you ever interacted with him?
I've been to an opening in London at the Sadie Coles HQ, and he was there, but I didn't want to harass him.
Yeah.
Because we were in the same show together in Sensational Fix.
Oh.
And so Roland Gronenboom knows him really well because he's the curator of that show, but he's also curated shows of Raymond's in Spain at the MACBA in Barcelona.
Have any of your students that you've taught end up becoming like kind of blown up in the art scene at all?
No.
No, they're just like...
They don't even
like
know what I do.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I don't tell them anything. I don't let them know anything about what I do. I just kind of cruise in and just talk to them about their work, and I don't say anything about what I do, anyone I know. I try and keep that really kind of...
separate.
Well, not
some of them
separate.
Must be music people, because our school kids are always musicians.
Yeah, well, look, some of them are, so they know who I am, so they're like, oh, you're... You know, and it's like, yes, yes, yes. And so they're kind of impressed about that, you know, for a bit. But then I just say, look, it's just all, it's nothing. So don't, just don't make a big worry about it. Yeah, just get on with your painting.
Any really talented painters come through there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I've got, there are some great students that I love working with. And so, yeah, in general, I love the hardworking, dedicated students. The slackers are just a pain in the ass, so... and there are lots of them, but, you know, I also supervise master's program okay. students as well, so those ones are fantastic.
Right.
And,
they've been vetted already.
They're already there, so...
Do you teach sound design, too?
A little bit, not a lot, because the school's not really geared up for that. Uh-huh. It's not a... Again, they don't really know what I do, so
yeah.
It's a bit of a mystery what the fuck they're going to do with me. But I would like to, certainly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've tried a few times, but it's just an uphill battle.
Yeah.
There's no money, apparently. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think this year I've probably got about... There might be four or five students that are really dedicated to sound, so mm-hmm. I might be able to claw some space... Mm-hmm. To do that, but, I mean, I always think that, and it never happens. So
yeah.
I have no idea. It's a demoralizing kind of existence being an art lecturer, I think.
and your wife also works.
My partner Sarah, she uh-huh. played in a band, Dora Maar.
Oh, I've heard of that. Yeah.
Yeah. So Dora Maar was they had an album on Fusedron and a CD okay. on Corpus Medicum mm-hmm. and a 7-inch as well that they did.
Yeah.
So Sarah paints a lot. And still plays guitar a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I always encourage you to record. So
yeah, you guys have ever worked on a music project?
Yeah, we did a Gate stuff for uh-huh. a while there. So there was about five people in Gate for a while.
Oh, okay. Oh, really?
So synthesizer, guitar, bass, drums.
I assumed it was solo. Yeah.
But this was all in Dunedin, so uh-huh. you know, it only existed for a short period of time.
Yeah.
We did like a few shows, and then I did something else, so yeah.
I noticed on your Discogs, I saw that you had like a credit under This Kind of Punishment record.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you would play with them, or a lot of people played on...
No, I did an album with them. I played with them for... We rehearsed for about a year in like 85, I think it was, or 86. It was before the Dead Sea.
Uh-huh.
And so the Jeffries brothers were living in Dunedin, mm-hmm. and they needed a bass player, and they chose me to be the bass player. And it was great. We had a really good time. We recorded an album.
Yeah.
And we only played one show.
Only one live show?
Oh. My only regret is we didn't play enough.
Right.
Outside. We would rehearse a lot. But in the end, it was just one performance.
Yeah.
With Shane Carter as well.
Okay.
Shane Carter's from Dimmer and from Straight Jacket Fits.
Oh, Straight Jacket Fits, yeah.
And from the Double Happies and from Board Games. And so
board games. Yeah, they just reissued that recently.
Yeah, so recently Shane and Robbie from the Dead Sea and me, we've been playing shows as Carter Morley Yeats. And we've played like four shows in the last 4 years.
Yeah.
And we've been recording quite a bit. And we have a couple of albums worth of material. And we're gonna do some other shows next month in New Zealand. And the month after in New Zealand, so we've got like some shows in February, March.
Yeah.
And Shane's relocated to Dunedin because he was living in Auckland for a while. Mm-hmm. So we kind of hope that we can do something new there. It's just kind of improvised rock psychedelia, maybe. But
when you play like in San Francisco, I remember seeing you guys at Gallia at this show that Chris Cohen put on. I was at that show.
Oh, really? We got told off for smoking weed in that remember there was that gallery?
Oh, the upstairs. Yeah, the second floor.
So we went upstairs and we smoked a joint up there, and the fucking owners came up and told us off. And
really?
Like, man, it's just hot. It's okay now. But now it's fine.
Yeah, well, in California, it's
love
mostly.
California.
It's
Colorado, really, Washington, Oregon.
Is it really still pretty illegal in New Zealand still?
Okay. The police... I don't really think the police care unless you're doing industrial quantities.
Right, yeah.
I don't do industrial quantities, so
like, kids, stay off the weed.
Don't smoke pot.
Or make amazing music if you do, at least. And so you guys have some plans with Dead Sea stuff?
We have a new album coming out this year.
Okay. Bada Bing doing it?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So we had.
Does it sound like this?
No. We did a 7-inch with a Swedish label, Danish.
Uh huh.
I don't know. some European label we did a 7-inch with last year.
Uh-huh.
And that was from the sessions we did. So we did a session like 2 years ago, one night. We played at this local pub called Chicks Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
We advertised it as Not the Osmonds. And like three people turned up. And we recorded the entire performance, which was like 3 hours.
Wait. So when you play at home, three people show up. But if you play with your name...
We didn't... I don't know.
Yeah, you don't know. But like three people just... Not the Osmonds.
Not the Osmonds were playing at Chicks Hotel. One guy came from Germany.
He was
a friend of ours. He was in... Oh, he's Austrian from Germany. I don't know.
Yeah.
But he was in Dunedin. He was like, I don't know what that is. I'll come along and see what it is. And another two people just kind of absentmindedly walked in and were like, oh. And it was free. Like, just walk
free
in.
Show.
So they just walked in and were like, really? You guys are playing tonight? But it was a recording session. So we recorded the entire session.
Mm-hmm.
And that's finally being mixed and is coming out as a double LP.
And
this year sometime. Whenever Ben can get the cover art, whenever we can agree on a title.
Yeah. And is it hard? It must be really hard to... Everyone's so busy in their lives, I'm sure, to like do big tours or anything like that.
We didn't play at all last year.
Not at all?
We played nowhere.
Wow.
Yeah. It was kind of good.
Yeah.
I kind of liked it because it was like, we don't have to.
Yeah.
Really, it's like, we've got... I felt this like some years ago. It's like... We've got nothing to prove to anybody really now.
Yeah.
Why should we play anywhere? I'd much rather just play at home and just come and do shows here in the US and or in Europe, and like I don't care about playing in New Zealand and you know, it's such a small community and it's like they've seen us.
Yeah.
They know what we're like.
I think you gotta go do your sound check now.
Okay.
But Michael, thanks so much for meeting with me.
Thank you, man. That's really nice. Thank you, George.
Talk to you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.